welcome to the Blind Handyman Show. We're recording right now at the Little Ranch House Studio in Southwood Drive in Lufkin, Texas. Show number 154. This is April 11, 2006. For the next hour, we're going to talk about building, repairing, and maintaining, all designed with the blind in mind. Here are the hosts for the Blind Handyman. Ladies and gentlemen, Don Patterson.
Hey, you give me 10 more degrees, I'll be swimming in April, huh? It's summer. Come to East Texas.
Hey, Don Shaw.
Yeah, we're getting into that good weather, aren't we, Tom Houston?
We certainly are. That's my name, Tom Houston. But here he is, the creator and producer of the Blind Handyman Show, ladies and gentlemen, Phil Parr.
Wow. Pretty exciting, isn't it?
Look at the
finalizer there and see if it's bypassed.
The finalizer.
Finalizer, right on the right hand end. The button. There's three buttons,
here. Huh? Let's see here.
See the bypass switch?
Uh huh.
Mm-hmm.
You see it? Is it bypassed?
I can't tell yet, Phil. I hadn't found
it. You can't tell. You hadn't found the switch yet. There's three little switches right on the right hand end, right?
Okay.
Then there's a knob. And then there's a bypass switch. See it there? He doesn't see it.
Uh-oh.
Let me see. Talk while
bypass switch. That's what we're looking for, ladies and gentlemen, is a
I think we have
switch.
Bypassed the bypass.
Phil is going to the bypass switch with his right hand. He is reaching over across the board.
And what a big difference there.
Yeah.
What a
oh.
Hey, Houston.
Okay. Here it is.
Okay, let's see here, Philip.
Here it was bypassed.
Oh, yeah. We're good.
The thing was out of line. See there? Look there, right there. I'm going to bypass it.
Okay.
I bypassed it.
Oh, yeah, okay. That's why my headphones didn't sound the same.
That's right.
They're sounding a lot differently
Houston,
right now.
Tom Houston, I wanted you to notice his backhand move, huh? Quite a backhand at the bypass.
I would like for everybody listening to take a look at this big old airplane I'm flying.
Should we start
and they
over?
Would, they would yeah. understand why I missed the bypass switch.
And all this. Now, that wasn't your fault. That's my fault. I should have checked that before you came.
Anyway, it's recording, though, right?
Oh, it was recording. Yeah, we don't have to start over.
Oh, okay.
Unless you want to.
No, this is fine.
No, everything's fine. It'll all be fine.
I'm not embarrassed
folks
at all.
Folks in Boston will love it. It wasn't your fault.
People know I drink a lot. You know.
It wasn't your fault.
Okay.
Anyway, hello there. Welcome to the exciting Blind Handyman Show.
154. That's
154. That is unbelievable.
I mean, this is kind of a parlor game that's gotten out of hand. We used to sit around and talk about this crap.
Well, we were going to do a few of these and let it go at that, and here we are. You know, 154. That's
amazing. 3 years worth.
It is.
That would be 3 years worth. Almost 3 years.
156
would be 3 years worth, and we're all still friends. We all still speak to each other.
Well, we never really were that close.
I guess that's true. Bunk muffins. But the thing is, that turntable John Connolly stole has quit working. I think that's funny.
Would you care to tell us where he stole it from?
No, I'm not telling you where he stole it from, but he stole it and it's quit working and he's really unhappy about it and he can't buy another one. It'd be $500.
I think you should send it back to wherever he stole it from and let them repair it.
Yeah, if they've got another for him.
Let them repair it and then go get
that's
it.
That's entirely possible. He might. I had some story I was going to tell, but I've forgotten. I know what I need to mention. We have worked out a deal with FTP Radio. Those of you not familiar with FTP, it's a site for blind people. It's called for-the-people.com.
Yep.
.com. for-the-people.com. You can join. It costs nothing to join. There are probably 50 chat rooms over there and all kinds of subjects. Lots of people to talk to 24 hours a day. Blind people that you can visit with. They have tech rooms. They have a golfing thing. They have guitar lessons. And they have one thing that is devoted to FTP radio. It's in stereo. It is nice sounding. They do some music shows on there. And we're going to start on the 2nd of May doing the Blind Handyman Show live on Tuesday afternoons.
And in person.
Phone calls and all.
That's right. That's the deal. That's the deal. Phone calls and all. We'll start Tuesday afternoon at 1 o'clock Central, which would be
2 Eastern.
Which would be 2 Eastern.
Somebody's mowing my lawn.
Someone is cutting the grass as we speak.
Someone's cutting the grass even as we speak. Wonder if she hired. I guess she hired somebody. Probably some client came in, couldn't afford a divorce, and she said, "I'll tell you what I'll do.
Yeah.
You'll mow my grass the rest of the summer."
Yeah, you're a free son of a gun.
Yeah.
That's the deal.
We'll get rid of that bitch you married. That would be 2 Eastern, 1 our time, 11 Pacific, right?
Yep.
Okay, so 1 o'clock our time, we'll do the Blind Like Me show. I'll put it together. I've probably already done the interview. I may do some interviews live. That's what I'm kind of thinking I may do later on, is do those, some of those live.
Yeah, that'd be swell.
Then from 2 to 3, we'll do an hour of country music, American Classic Country. I have a nice collection of old country music. At 3 o'clock Central, it'll be 4 o'clock Eastern, we will start the Blind Handyman Show, just like we're doing now, live on Tuesday afternoons. We'll give you a phone number to call. You can call in questions. You can call and say hi to your favorite host, Tom. Or you can call and... You can just call and ask why that guy's mowing the grass.
Yeah.
Just anything you would be in the. And what Hallie said the other day, you mean like it'd be like a real radio show? People could actually call in?
A real radio
show. Yeah, and it will be like a real radio show. People can call in. Anyway, that's starting May 2nd. So if you are not a member of FTP, go check it out. F4-the-people.com.
And remember this, we probably don't have a 6-second time delay, so you can really tell us what you think.
Well, you can. You can do that. I meant to mention that when we got started. You can do that. You can call up and say the F4 to do whatever you want to do, but Don will cut it out.
That's right.
Yeah.
I mean, it may get on that air. And in fact, I can cut it off that air. I set up a little thing here where I can immediately...
Do we have the F-word detector working? Huh?
I've set up a switch here that I think I can kill the feed of the computer that quick.
Okay, let me try. I'll fiddle faddle.
No, yeah.
Yeah, boy, you missed that.
The F word.
Oh.
I think I missed it. Anyway, you can do that. Donald, cut it out. You might get it on For the People, then you'll get kicked off, and Jennifer will come to your house and beat you to death.
That's right.
But it'll, anyway, ForThePeople.com. Come over there, and we'll start live on the 2nd of May. All right, that's enough.
Oh, okay.
Go ahead, Tommy.
Here's a guy says, "Hi all, what's the best way for a blind person to splice new electrical cords to something?" This is a guy named Troy.
Well, wire nuts. He's talking about electrical cords, heavy wire. Wire nuts are the best thing, don't you think?
Yeah, I think, or by another name, Scotch locks.
They don't make big enough Scotch locks to do that with.
All right.
I was going to talk about Scotch locks.
Yeah, or a junction box. It depends on where you are.
And what you're going to really do.
And there, but even inside the box, yeah, you would need the wire nuts. But if you want to keep them in a nice, orderly fashion, put in a junction. I'm not sure why you're splicing the wire. You know, it's nice to have long enough wire to not splice, but if you're putting in a switch or something, then you're still going to use the wire nuts.
If you're doing Romax upstairs in your attic, put a junction box and splice them together in the junction box. Yeah. Don't just make a splice.
Right.
And don't use wire nuts up there. If you're putting a cord on a vacuum, wire nuts would be fine, but I would tie the wire with wire nuts, and then I would take the two pieces of cord that I spliced together and hold them together and run some tape around them so there'd be no way you could pull the cords apart. Right?
Right, yeah, and I wouldn't, you know, just on a splice, I mean, I don't exactly know, like I say, what he's splicing. It sounds like maybe he cut his cord off his table saw or something.
Lamar King.
Yeah, anyway, I would not splice with just electrical tape.
No, not really a good idea.
But if in certain areas, I always used wire nuts and electrical tape. So.
Yeah, and so... if you're doing small wire, Scotch locks, you can buy Scotch locks and use them. Scotch lock is the thing you just push the two pieces of wire up in it. Don't even have to cut the insulation off. Just push them up in and clamp down on it with a pair of pliers, and it'll splice the wire together. It'll make a little incision in the wire.
That would be the way I might do if it's the cord to your vacuum cleaner, you might do that and then do the electrical tape on the outside. You know.
Okay.
Is that Shaw?
Yeah.
Oh.
Excuse me. That sounds good to me. Anyway, most all of the people on the list were talking the wire nuts. And one even went as far to say if you were going to err on the side of safety, but like taping it after you use the wire nuts.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Tape the two. Pull
I've
the two,
done that.
Pull the two pieces of cord together and tape them tight. together so that you can't pull the wire nuts apart. You know what I'm talking about? And then do the wire nuts. So if you're doing a vacuum cleaner especially. And that's what I think he's doing.
Oh.
Anyway. Go ahead.
Lynn and I have just installed new cabinets, new countertop and sink. So what needs to be covered now is the areas below the cabinets and up and over the backsplash of the new countertop.
All right.
What I need is a product I can work with, something that can be applied with just a glue-like adhesive, not looking for any type of gunk to get messy with, nothing that close up and personal, and a product I can cut and trim by myself. I thought of artificial brick. That's got to be a lovely look. But come on, just how easy is it to apply?
Yeah.
Perhaps one of you are experiencing the same dilemma of sorts. The new wall covering will be a heavy, washable vinyl paper. Lynn prefers it not to go behind the countertop. If I had my way, I'd stucco it. But I bet cleanup would be tedious as all get out. Don't they sell vinyl tiles that look dimpled?
Yeah. Yeah, vinyl tile of all kinds would be good. I'd call some guy and get him to Formica if it's me.
Wait, I've missed, though. He's got a new countertop, but Reed started the front. I'm not sure what he's trying to do.
He says he's installed new cabinets, new countertop, and sink.
Yeah.
And he needs to cover the areas below the cabinets and up and over the backsplash of the new countertop.
Oh, okay. He does have a backsplash. See, I was confused. I thought he wanted to... The area below the cabinets, well, because that should be just a 1x4 down on the, down on the floor. Oh, no, below the cabinets, below the upper cabinets. Yeah, mm-hmm. He needs a good, this is going to be a wallpaper or something similar. And I'm not sure that they make, do they not make paper with adhesive on it, Donald?
I
believe they do. They make wallpaper.
It's called contact paper. Oh. But... It is very hard to get wrinkle-free, to do without wrinkling.
Right, because when
boy,
you
once
stick
you stick it, it's there.
Yeah, if you got a wrinkle in it.
And it is really, really, Polly, bless her heart, she's Osama bin Laden's niece. I was married to it one time.
I thought she was older than Osama.
She covered it. She's older than everybody. She covered some kind of cabinet, and boy, we got... I mean, you get a big wrinkle, you would just take it off and start over. But it's called contact paper, but it's hard to work with.
Or get your countertop person to run the Formica up to the bottom. That's what
I did.
Bottom of the cabinet.
Well,
the
he said he's already got the backsplash there. And so then that leaves, you're going to have. Now, you talked about stucco. You wish you could stucco it. Actually, Sherwin-Williams makes a paint that duplicates stucco. I called and asked about this not too long ago because I thought about doing the outside of my pavilion that I'm building in stucco. And it will cover on plywood. If you will do your seams, now you need to, if you have a splice or a seam in your plywood, you'd need to float that out with some kind of wood sealer or something, but then you paint this on either with a roller or something, and when it dries, it is hardly undetectable from stucco, and it's good inside and out.
I'll bet you Emily vetoed that right quick.
No, she actually thought about it. In real stucco, I'm not an expert, but they put up some kind of wire mesh, and then I'm not sure if they blow the stucco, like the concrete. When they do a pool, they're using an air gun. They blow the concrete on your pool with an air gun. And that's kind of the way stucco is done. But this is a reasonable... I talked to a builder that had used it, and he said it's very good. So you might... If you want stucco, you could have it.
I assume this is a blind guy. I'd catch a cab, go to Lowe's, tell some service guy there what you want. He'll show you 15 things that would work for what you want to do.
Amen. Absolutely. And
Home Depot. He'll show you a host of different things that will do exactly what you want to do. But just to know, I have no idea. And she's not going to like that paper anyway. I hate to tell you that, but she's not.
Here's the guy, Phil, that wants to know what a dado, a rabbit, and a lap joint is.
Well, I can tell him what two of them are.
All right.
I know what a rabbit is.
All right. A rabbit is something before a walk at, isn't it?
Right. Now we got, okay.
In fact, we're getting close to that Sunday, I believe.
I think we are. It is Easter, isn't it? We'll have an Easter snap.
Yeah.
All right. A dado is a deal where you put their two blades side by side, and they cut a wider hole than normal. I mean, you aren't cutting a board in two. you're making a slot in this board. In other words, if you got a 2-inch tube before, you want to bring your dado blade up an inch and slide it your tube before across that, and it'll just cut a little notch, and you can cut a notch up to, I don't know, 3 inches, 2.5-inch notch. In other words, if you wanted to notch something together, and you had some, say, inch-thick material, and you wanted to inch-thick this into the tube before, you could cut a dado an inch wide and slide it up in there, and it would just be, you know, it would be perfect. You're cutting a notch or a trough in something. That's what a dado is. What's the other two?
Okay, a rabbit.
I don't know that I know.
Here's a guy that said it's kind of like a dado with two sides only, usually along the edge of the wood, such as you would see in a picture frame where the glass would sit.
Okay.
Okay, I got his point.
Okay, the other one's a half lap joint.
I don't know that I know that.
This is where an equal amount of wood is removed from each piece, so that when the pieces are put together, the surfaces
overlap.
Are flush.
Overlap. A lap joint. We should have been able to. Yeah. Well, we're really, really bright fellows, aren't we? Yeah. Yeah, well, we need to get somebody else to do this show.
They nailed us again, didn't they?
They did. We ought to know. We should have known that.
Why should we have known that? I've never heard of a lap joint.
I've heard of lap joint.
Lap dancing.
Heard of lap dancers.
Lap dancers.
Yeah. Well, you people are sick. Why do I work with folks like this? Why am I forced to deal with people like this? Anyway, we're going to do a little welding this afternoon, talk about welding and how it's done and whether or not you can do it. And you may be able to figure out a way to do it. We'll talk a little bit about with, what's this gentleman's name?
Kurt Kushner is going to
Kurt
talk to
Kushner,
us.
Personal friend of Dave Ferens, but don't know that again.
Keep your fingers in your pocket.
That's right. Watch your wallets, buddy. We'll be back in just a minute with more of the exciting Blind Handyman Show. Hang on. Of the Blind Handyman Show is blind people have as many plumbing problems and household repairs to do as sighted people do, but we can't do them exactly the same way sighted people do, so we need some input from other blind people to find out how they do household repairs, and so we formed this, started this Blind Handyman, and we got a list going. And as far as blind like me is concerned, we want to use it as an educational tool. As I remember being a young adult, a young person, and thinking, well, how am I going to, I want a nice house and as kids and a good job, but how am I going to do that? And I had just had no idea. I think the Blind Like Me show demonstrates the fact that it can be done even if you are blind. That's not a handicap. It can be done.
If you would like to be a guest on either show, or you can suggest someone as a guest, email us at blindhandyman@hotmail.com or blindlikeme@txucom.net.
Well, so far, it's been a labor of love. Do you know about the Blind Handyman List, sir?
The thing I like the best about the Blind Handyman List, great place. Exchange information and gather ideas on anything to do with being a handyman around the house.
I found out how to fix my garbage disposal on the handyman list, and it worked.
If you'd like to join the Blind Handyman list, send a blank email to blindhandyman-subscribe@yahoogroups.com. That's blindhandyman-subscribe@yahoogroups.com.
The thing I like about the Blind Handyman list, I'm the moderator, and I can delete you if I want to. So don't get out of line. Stay on topic.
That's blindhandyman-subscribe@yahoogroups.com.
This is the Blind Handyman. Be sure and tell a friend about the program and email us often, blindhandyman@hotmail.com. Now, here is more of the show with Don Shaw.
Hello, Mr. Kurt. How are you today?
Just lovely. And yourself?
Oh, man. Should we really tell these folks that you're really David's next-door neighbor?
Hey, whatever you want to do.
That's truly the case.
Personal friend of Dave Farron, is that right?
What a deal.
Well, that's good. We're glad to have you. Have you ever heard? You never heard the show, have you?
Yes, I have, actually.
David forced you to listen to one, did he?
He strapped me in the chair and
Well, that's good. And let's start off by telling everybody that you are perfectly sighted. You don't have any eye problem.
That's correct.
And you won't catch blindness by working on this show.
Right.
We
and
hope.
You, and you never do it while you're intoxicated, right?
Oh, I don't know about that.
Don't know about that. Well, we're glad to have you, and we want to talk a little bit about welding this afternoon. We're not really sure that a blind person can weld. I'm still thinking that I interviewed a blind guy who did, but nobody seems to know about that but me.
Right.
But anyway, we want to talk a little about welding, and now here to ask you some poignant questions about welding is Don Patterson.
Don Patterson. Oh.
All right, Kirk. Yeah, I have a couple. First of all, are there, in general, I guess, would you say, are there two basic types of, rod welding and wire welding? Is that kind of?
Yeah, I mean, let me just say this, that I'm a jack of all trades, master of none. So.
Okay.
But actually, there's many types, but you're right. Most popular is electric.
And or acetylene?
Acetylene.
You're right.
Oxygen acetylene.
Right.
Which is basically a flame.
And so anymore, I mean, pretty much on say, the average household, unless you got into big industrial, I mean, is the wire welding's going to be able to handle it, right? I mean, electric welding?
Yeah, most of them. You know, your carbon arc, which is normally called stick welding.
Right.
Using a coated electrode. You know, with a lot of voltage there, either DC or AC. But, I would think that would probably be most common, like in households or garages.
Right.
Places where, you know, they want to invest a lot of money. Because you get into the MIGs and the TIGs, you know, the equipment can be very expensive.
Right. I was going to say, I had some welding done here recently. In fact, I'm building a pavilion, like, behind our swimming pool. And the guy had a little welding rig, and he said he paid, $395, $400 for it. Don't
really?
Know the brand, but it was a wire welder.
Right.
Or I call it, I don't know if I'm using the proper terminology.
Well, no, you're absolutely right. That would probably be a MIG. You can get a little portable job.
Right. He just carried it around. It's, you know, say twice as big as the average battery charger, maybe. I mean,
they come in different sizes. It all depends on what you're going to use
right.
it for.
And we did. We had some 4-inch, 4x4 tubing. I don't know, 14 gauge. I may be wrong on the gauge. And then he built the framework for that and a dog kennel that I'm going to build. And it seemed to have. I mean, his welding was nice and neat. And you know, we asked you earlier if you're perfectly sighted. I'm partially sighted. I have some vision, but my problem with...
There's a lot more vision than David Farron has.
My problem is that I cannot see out of the hood. When you wear the hood, you know, even when I have the arc, I'm not sure if I'm doing it right. And I noticed when this guy was doing some work for me, he burnt his eye. He came one day and he had his, like, yellow sunglasses on.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, he kind of got his eyes hurt a little bit. So you might, anyway, kind of maybe tell us what you would use one versus the other or what you do. Maybe tell us what kind of welding you have.
Yeah, well, I have an electric carbon arc welder. It's 240 volt, and the voltage is adjustable, or I should say the amperage, rather, is adjustable from, say, 20 up to, I think, 300 amps. So the more amperage, the hotter you can, you know, you can weld, the thicker the materials you can weld. Carbon arc is really good for more for like ferrous metal, iron, steel, things like that, where you're really going to, you need a lot of heat, and you're trying to bond two types of metals together. Because actually what the carbon arc, well, all of them, but the electric welders and the acetylene, oxygen acetylene welders, you're actually melting the metal. You're heating the metal on both parts, and you're using your rod as a filler, if you will. And that's what actually creates creates the joint.
So you're not melting the rod, you're melting the metal, and it melts the rod.
Well, no, actually, kind of like all simultaneously.
Okay.
You know, because in an electric welder, the spark, if you will, or the electricity is coming off the end of the electrode, which is the rod, and it's creating a spark or an arc right at the surface of them two metals. So the rod's melting, and the two steels, if you will, or two metals that you're working with is melting together, and that rod is using as a filler, so you don't have a gap, if you will. It's filling in the gap as it burns.
And Kirk, now would be a good time, you know, for the people out here who can't see to describe this. In a sense, you know, I mentioned earlier a battery charger.
Right.
You clamp that, the jaws, to your metal someplace. I mean, your machine, in a sense, it has the probe. I mean, you're saying the electricity or something is coming out of one end, but you actually use that ground wire.
Correct.
Or something to hook up your unit. So maybe tell us about that. You know, how big, what does it look like, kind of?
Well, once again, the welder I have is probably 2 feet wide by 3 feet high by maybe 16 inches deep. Like I said, it does plug into 240 volts. It has two cables, fairly heavy, to describe them, probably half inch in diameter cabling, you know, wire.
Uh-huh.
One is the side where the electrode would go.
The positive or negative, I guess. Or?
Right. And then the other is, like you said, is a clamp, which would go onto one piece of metal to complete the circuit. So when you put the electrode close to the steel, that's when you get the spark. It's going to jump to the steel and create the heat and melt it. So, you know, of course, as you were saying earlier about the more of a safety issue, I mean, you know, people that are welding, you need to wear...
I think that's the fader, Bob. You move it down just a little bit.
Face mask that has, you know, a shield, because this creates very bright...
The slide.
UV light. You can burn the retina.
Yeah.
Trying to look at it directly. And even beyond that... you know, heavy clothing, leather gloves. I know.
Yeah.
You know, when I've done things. I mean, this when you're done welding, even if it's just a little joint, the metal, it's red hot. I mean, it's just got done being melted.
Uh huh.
I mean, we're talking, you know, 2,000-3,000 degrees.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know that in my little project we started a couple of little fires.
Oh, yeah.
At various, you know, out in the underbrush. I mean, we were out of doors. And also, and I know the people that listen regularly like to hear me talk about this. We set some plates in concrete, and we used 3/4-inch bolts down in the concrete that when you screw them down, they flare out. I can't think of the name for it. But we had welded the plate, and then we welded the post, the 4x4 iron. You know, we used like red iron, we call it, on there. And so we ran out of epoxy, and so we used my world famous liquid nail.
Yeah.
Well, let me tell you, liquid nail is flammable.
Oh, yeah.
And so
now, this is when you're building the pavilion.
The pavilion, yes.
Okay.
And so, like you say, the sparks. I mean, because at one time also we used my little tractor to pull down a couple of beams to make them butt up against each other. And so we covered, the guy told me, so you better put something over that tractor, you know. And I didn't realize, if you're just off in the distance, you don't realize, especially or visually impaired and or blind, about the sparks that occur from all this.
So what you're doing is using the difference between the hot side of the electricity and the ground to create heat.
Yeah, basically.
That's how the heat is created.
Right.
I did not with an electric welder.
With an electric welder.
Now with an acetylene welder.
Well, the acetylene, obviously, you have, you know, you picture a flame, a torch. If you guys have ever used a blowtorch for soldering pipes,
yeah,
things like that.
Uh huh.
Pretty much like that, but on a much larger scale.
Yeah.
And it uses you have two tanks. You have acetylene, which is a much hotter gas when it burns than, say, propane that you would use for
copper sweating, you know, doing your pipes.
Yeah.
And then it mixes with oxygen, which really, really creates an intense flame. Like I said, oxygen acetylene welding, that flame coming out of the end of your orifice, if you will, the end of the, I don't know what to call it, but it's 3,000 degrees because, you know, it has to be able to melt the steel.
Well, it's an orifice. Yes, it is. And it actually is a flame, whereas with the electric you're using, looks like to me would be a whole lot safer.
Well, you know, there's two different, you know, it's two different types of stick welding or electric welding, if you will, is really probably most popular for the novice, you know, a guy like myself who just does a little bit here and there at the house and so forth and so on.
You have an electric setup, right?
Electric setup.
Yeah.
Oxygen acetylene has been around
forever. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because of the bulkiness, and you got to have tanks, and like you said, there is a danger there because you got two giant cylinders.
Very explosive.
Yeah.
So material. You know, you have to be storage. You got to be careful with storage, okay. And you know, then you got to lug them to get them filled, and all the other things. But then the MIG welding and the TIG welding, that's kind of newer on the market. I mean, not like yesterday or anything. I'm not overly familiar with that other than it uses a continuous wire feed. It has a little spool of wire in with the machine.
And this is what his guy was doing.
That's what my guy was doing. A little machine, because he picked it up in one hand. I would say you described yours. It sounded about the same.
Right.
Size, say, I don't know, a couple of feet, foot and a half wide, foot deep, 2 feet tall. And I'm not sure how many adjusts, you know, if he could do the vote. Obviously, he could do something. But actually, because the only reason I knew it fed the wires because it jammed one time. And so he had to go, and I didn't know it. But it's really like a large soldering gun, if you will, you know. Except I know that he put the ground, you know, that ground cable over there on his metal.
You do heavy welding with electric? I mean, is this the acetylene where you do the gigantic, you know, big beams and stuff? Can you do that with electrically welding?
Well, the best way for me to describe it is electric welders, I would say, obviously I don't have a giant one.
Yeah.
But I would imagine I could probably attach two pieces of metal up to 3/8 of an inch thick.
Okay.
Each piece.
All right, just for clarification, Kirk, I think because I'm confused too. Like, well, we're talking about the wire welder that feeds the wire. What, you're using a rod or a?
The rod.
So you're holding that separate from your welding machine, right?
Yes.
You have two things in your hands. You're welding.
No. The stick or the rod clamps into, you know, what I call the electrode.
Okay.
You have the two clamps. One is the ground, and the other one is
right.
The positive side, if you will, and it has a clamp that holds the rod. So you're really only you know, the stick is coming out of the holder, so you're only holding the probe there and using it that way. But you know, once again, there's advantages and disadvantages. I think that electric welding is a little easier to use, but it's limited. I think if you were doing a lot of cutting, a lot of, you know, as we call burning, if you wanted to take a half-inch sheet of metal and burn it down through, you know, if you had an 8-foot-long piece of steel and you wanted to cut it, you would have great difficulty with an electric welder to cut. But that's where an oxygen acetylene deal would come in.
Well, you'd need a big oxygen acetylene.
Yeah.
What do you do with yours? What do you do? Do you have
Like I said, just home projects. I've
make a barbecue pit or
bed frames from time to time that have broken. I built a manual log splitter for a guy one time, you know, using the welder. And
well, Kirk, this is not the way you make your living.
Oh, absolutely not.
Okay, good. It's I wanted to talk to you about like the hood that you wear and the glass that you look out of. Are there degrees of thickness? Or, I mean, how do you measure that, or is a welding hood a welding hood?
Well, I mean, for the best way to answer your question is that a welding hood is a welding hood, although there are different styles. Because the, from what I know, the UV light given off by the welders is pretty much standard.
Right.
You know, whether you use a stick welder or you use a MIG welder or a TIG welder.
Yeah.
Or, you know, it's just damn bright.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And it will, yeah. And it will burn you, right?
Oh, it'll fry your eyeballs.
Right.
No question. But the difference being that, you know, I have an inexpensive model where you know, just hook the back of your head and it flips down. It's very similar to what you're saying. The guy that came over to work on the thing. And it's just, when you flip it down, you know, the shield's there, you know, the filter, the light filter. But they make them today, if you want to spend a boatload of money, that are battery driven, where as soon, in other words, you put the hood on and you can see out it. It's like, you know, just like clear, like daylight.
Wow.
And as soon as it senses that bright light coming, the filter somehow, it takes batteries. And it'll shield, you know, it'll change colors right in front of your eyes.
But it would let you get in. But see, my biggest problem is getting my project set up before I strike the arc.
Yeah,
when I put the regular problem. When I put the regular hood on, I cannot see.
Right.
But see, if I had clear daylight and then it was going to protect me automatically, that is
be the thing to have,
yeah.
Wouldn't it?
It'd be the thing for you.
It would work, yeah. See, I just naturally think, and we'll talk about it in a minute, like, in all practicality, though, because they cannot get their hands around this, you know David Farron.
Right.
So how can a blind person, in your honest opinion, weld?
Or can they not weld?
Or can they not weld,
Well,
and discounting David, we know damn well he can't.
And his blindness doesn't have anything to do with it.
Yeah. Listen, you guys aren't being kind here.
Oh, no, we're not. We're not. We're never kind to David.
We never are.
We never are.
Never are.
You know, that's a tough question, but I would think, you know, if you can set up the project, you know, obviously you can feel. So, you know, the intensity of the light, you know, the UV light given off, that I would think if someone's partially sighted, I think once, you know, if they could get themselves set up where they could feel where that rod needs to hit, and as soon as it did hit the steel and the arc started, it's very possible that they could certainly see enough to, you know, follow down along a line or, you know, move or something.
Now,
because,
but,
I mean, even with the face shield, it's still bright.
Well, we know that there are stationary welders. I mean, they've used those in automobile manufacturing and everything forever. And because we're not talking about big bucks, but like you said, if a guy could set up his work, if he had a way to put his implements in a stationary position to do a particular thing, it may be possible, but I don't know how he could. You know, at some point in time, you've got to have some pretty close contact, and you can't use your hands.
Oh, you don't want to do that.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. You're welding with your electric thing, and you have your ground clamp clamped on, and you're ready to strike the arc. Is that piece of thing that you hold in your hand, is it cold until you pull the trigger?
Yeah. It's whatever the temperature is outside.
Until you pull the trigger, and then we got...
Then you have an instant electric arc at whatever temperature. I mean, it's instant. It's hot.
I think I could do it.
I mean, if you think about voltage, I mean, if you guys have ever done anything with just standard electricity coming into your house, you know, whether you have a 110 or a 220 set up.
Yeah.
But you're only dealing with a 10 or 15 amp circuit. If you've ever crossed two wires together.
Yeah.
I mean, they melt. I mean.
Oh, yeah.
So now take that and add, you know, double the voltage, but put 200 amps to it. And it just creates fire. It's just incredible.
You know, it's real interesting, Kirk. The guy that did my welding also, his unit was a 110, and we ran it off a 100-and-something foot of extension cord.
Yeah, they make, there's all different styles.
So he wasn't doing a lot of amperage. I mean, you know, it amazed me that he, I mean, like I say, we were 100, you know, he had a heavy-duty cord, pretty heavy-duty, but not much bigger than my average extension cord.
Yeah, like I said, they make different sizes. That, you know, like if he had a MIG, I mean, obviously, those are ideal for, you know, spot welding and, you know, thinner materials.
He does patio covers mostly.
Yeah,
and
that's pretty light stuff.
And uses, you know, I mean, when he's aluminum, obviously he uses bolts, but on the red iron, we call it, you know, just that you buy at the local pipe company, or like, that's what he does.
Right. Yeah, most of the MIGs and the TIGs are most commonly used for lighter metals, stainless steel. You can even do aluminum, depending on what kind of wire you have in the setup as well. Because, you know, the difference is it's a wire. You know, it's not coated. Whereas a stick welder, the rods, you buy them in different thicknesses. So if you're using an 1/8-inch thick rod, then it's good for up to this thickness of metal. You know, maybe two pieces joining 1/8-inch a piece, you know, thickness a piece. And then you can go up to a rod that's 1/4-inch. If you're really putting the juice to it, and you need a thicker rod, because it needs to handle more amperage. You know, so if you've got the welder cranked up to 250 amps, you know, you would just fry the little 1/8-inch rod. Now you need a heavy rod.
yeah, makes sense.
So, and the TIGs and the MIGs, I mean, that's the principle that they are. But it's just a piece of wire in a coil, comes out, it has a little trigger feed on the handle, automatically advances it. And it uses, like I said, I've never used one, I've seen it done, but they usually have some kind of inert gas that is used in conjunction with the wire to be used as a what word do I want to use? It keeps the weld from being contaminated from the outside, other materials, you know, from the air and so forth and so on, so you get a clean weld.
What if it be like the flux in soldering, you know?
Like the flux in soldering, yeah. And that's what I said, the stick welders, stick rods are coated with a flux,
right?
That actually keeps the contaminants out. So it's a trade-off.
Just curious, Kirk. You say you do this as a hobby. What? Why? I mean, how come welding? I mean, did you just one day say I want to do it, or I've got something I want to build? I sure wish I could weld.
Learn how to do this, or what?
Well, like I said earlier, I'm kind of a jack of all trades, master of none. I mean, I've been, you know, just wanted to do something one day, and I was at Sears, and I said, you know, I'm gonna buy a welder.
I'm gonna try this. Hell of a deal.
Well, does your wife have a sister?
Yeah. I took on welding and read up on it, and kind of self-taught myself. And I mean, I've done, you know, well, I don't want to get off the subject, but kind of trying to answer your question. I mean, I have a 5-horsepower compressor, for instance. I've done minor painting, whether it's my own vehicle or somebody else's.
Okay.
Painting, you know, things like that. So I bought it just for something to do one afternoon. You know, got some pieces of steel and see if I could do it. And then from there, I've done different projects.
Well, I think
that's
great.
That's pretty neat. Yeah, it is.
I think it's neat. All right, sir. We learned some things today. I didn't think I would. Of course, I'm the kind of guy, you know, I don't think you can. I can't learn anything.
He's kind of hard headed, but he wants to say that.
But it's been enjoyable, sir. And you keep on keeping on. And tell we really love David Friend. We pick on him a lot, but he wouldn't know how to act. We didn't.
Yeah, he's
well,
a good guy.
Anybody that's a friend of David Friend's is a friend of ours.
Well,
we enjoyed having you.
All right, let's take a little short break, and we're going to come back and tell you all you need to know about trusses, T-R-U-S-S's, in just a minute. I'm Phil Parr, back with more of the Blind Handyman Show. Hang on.
Round and round and round my head, touching the very bottom of me, making my soul sick. sir.
The thing I like the best about the Blind Handyman list, great place to exchange information and gather ideas on anything to do with being a handyman around the house.
I found out how to fix my garbage disposal on the handyman list. And it works.
If you'd like to join the Blind Handyman list, send a blank email to blindhandyman-subscribe@yahoogroups.com. That's blindhandyman-subscribe@yahoogroups.com.
The thing I like about the Blind Handyman list, I'm the moderator, and I can delete you if I want to. So don't get out of line. Stay on topic.
That's blindhandyman-subscribe@yahoogroups.com. A trip to Walmart.
I wonder where the pharmacy is. It's somewhere over here. Oh, God, I've got my cane caught in something.
Pardon me, sir. I don't know how to tell you this, but the end of your cane is stuck in my...
Why bother shopping the big discount stores when you can shop from the comfort of your own home at BlindMySmart.com?
Hi, this is Dale Campbell, president of Blind My Smart. If you can't find what you're looking for today, check back tomorrow. We're adding new products every day.
Blind My Smart, with thousands of products at a completely accessible website. Our address is blindmysmart.com. Again, that's www.blindmysmart.com.
It's making my soul sing. I'm crying out for more. Your love is king.
Thanks for listening to The Blind Handyman. If you have an idea for a topic or project you would like us to discuss, let us know at our address, blindhandyman@hotmail.com. Now, back to the show with Don Patterson.
All right.
Well, if we'd been talking about yard work today, we would have had some really good sound effects, wouldn't we?
That's it.
That's a client of Lou Ann's. Who comes around quite often. His name is J.J., and he does all kind of things. Very sharp boy. He just likes to party a little too much, and we get a lawn mowing out of him three or four times a summer.
Yeah, what a deal.
J.J., big, tall, good-looking kid.
See the guy I see on the side of the road when he's in the custody of the...
you might ask him after a while. Big, great, big, tall, good-looking kid, smart as a whip. Just sings real good, does voices, ought to be out Angeline College.
Really?
Does voices, all kinds of voices. Sings
cool.
Really good. He just likes to party a little too much.
Well.
So we get, like I said, three or four lawn mowings out of him every year. Well, JJ, glad to have you.
We're glad to see you.
Go ahead, Pat. Trust
you. Well, yeah, you know, may or may not be a surprise when I decided to build the swimming pool pavilion behind the pool, I went with trusses. These are prefab. This is your rafter, your ridge pole, your joist, all in one. If you've never seen one, I can basically describe the one I have. You can tell the company that builds them the roof pitch that you want, i.e. 412, 512. 412 roof means for every 4 feet of elevation, let's see what happens. It goes up 1 foot. And so for at the ridge pole on mine, what would be the ridge? You're 4 feet tall, and that beam is 11 feet across. I guess what I was amazed about, well, there's several. I learned a lot. Let me put it this way. I thought I knew what I wanted, and I did. But I'll tell you what, I learned some things along the way. First of all, it is not a one-man job to put them up. Secondly, I could not have built them for the price they charge me, the $58.20 a piece, and we'll discuss that in a minute.
Yeah, but you're talking about a big triangle.
Well, it's, yeah, my particular truck, I wanted to span in clear and open space an area 20 feet wide. And so but I also wanted an overhang of 6 inches on either side of my structure. Just so that the rain would run a little way away from you.
Yeah.
So my trusses are 21 feet long from end to end. They're 4 foot tall at the ridge. Wow. And they weigh approximately 109 or 110 pounds apiece.
Oh, really?
But the thing that I learned the most is just lumber. I calculated up there is roughly, see, 22, about 50-something feet of 2x4. That the construction also is 2x4s.
Yeah.
And there's not a nail in the truss. There's not one nail in the truss. Their angles are fitted together by these metal brackets. If you go to Lowe's and ask them, tell them you want to splice 2 2x4s together lengthwise and get them to show you that there's a metal plate. They're varying sizes, and on one side it is totally pins, sharp pins. And you fit this over your splice and you drive this, you hit this entire plate.
I've got a couple.
And it dries. Okay, in my particular...
And that's what the ends and the top are put together.
Every end, in other words, there's nothing nailed. They cut, and mine are called cantilever trusses, and they have, I guess the angles are calculated depending on the distance you're spanning. And so it has actually four, in other words, this is the triangle that you talk about. In other words, you have a 21-foot-long base, but that is also spliced, which amazed me.
Oh, but, it is.
Yeah.
In the middle.
Yeah. It's, well, off-centered a little bit. I think they used a 14-foot tube, I mean, just calculating. All uh-huh. their splices are uniform. But then, in a sense, you have like a W, the capital letter W. One angle, one leg of the W comes down, and then the other part that goes up to the ridge, and then down from the ridge, and then back up. And that's what supports it. And my problem is, if they paid laborers to put these together, they bought 50-something feet of lumber, and they used 24 of these metal things. At Lowe's, if you price these metal things, they're anywhere from 70 cents a piece to $1.30, depending on what size. Wow. I don't see how they came out.
I don't even see how they can do it.
I do not see how they came out. And
no
they,
kidding.
And they delivered them to me from Shreveport, Louisiana, 140 miles away,
yeah.
and did not charge me for shipping.
Wow.
So... anyway, it's the neatest. They're fragile, but they're strong. And that's when I read their literature. They sent a lot of safety about the do's and don'ts, how to handle them. And what I also learned is your worst enemy in a truss is interior walls, if they're too high. And in my concrete slab, I have 20 by 40. If I walked on it, and I walked, and I did many times before a structure was ever erected, I would have swore to you it was level. Well, the first, second, or third truss we put up, because we put the ones that span the absolute total open spaces up first, so we didn't have any problem. We just had one end and the other end, and
yeah.
it was 19 feet, 4 inches in between. But when we came to the first interior wall, it was too high. You wouldn't have thought it. So I have a grinder, and then we also got a saw. But anyway, we had to cut out the part so the truss would sit down in there. I did not attach the truss to the interior wall. But you did not. It would actually detract from the integrity. It would impugn the integrity of the truss to have that board sitting up too high. And that
well,
was
sure
a,
it would.
And that was a thing I like. Even if you forced, you know, each end down level, you wouldn't want to do that. So we notched.
Well, then
out.
You'd pop that splice, and you're liable to, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And so the biggest thing I find with them is after they're up, without having like a ridge pole that I call it. I mean, it actually would be like a 2x8 or a 2 something going across
yeah.
there. There's nothing to hold these sturdy from side to side, and so. What I'm going to do is brace off the end one, the very end one, plumb it up. That's what you have to do, and then come off of all the others off of that one and probably lath them together with 1x4 or something.
Is,
but
that,
anyway,
is that your plan before you deck?
That's my plan, yeah.
And of course, the decking will hold it together.
The decking would hold it together. And but that was an interesting... The thing I've learned about it is when you do rafters and joists on your own and ridgepole, you can make a mistake. These... You have to be right on.
I wish I'd come looked at one before you put it up.
Well, I've got one down on the ground. I'm going to show you.
Oh, you do?
Yes, I do.
All right, well, have Emily bring it.
Well, yeah. We thought you may come over. I thought at one time we were going to do the handyman show over there.
At your house?
Yeah.
Be a lot of trouble.
Well, we got Plex Talks. Oh, we can call Conley and have him ship one down here.
Yeah. Conley, two books, two Plex Talks and a book for it. We'll do handyman at your house. You want to do handyman? Let's see. Next week we have a guest.
Right.
Next week we have a guest. Is that right? We're going to do Susie next week, right, Charles?
Mm-hmm.
And then we have a week we don't have a guest. That week we'll do handyman at your house.
All right. Come on, come on.
Oh, my God. Did I just say that?
BYOB.
Goodbye. I see you said the blind man. Get out of my face. Goodbye, Don Shaw, Don Pat, Tom Houston. Thank you all. I appreciate you. Thanks, JJ, for the sound effects.
Yeah.
Thanks, JJ. And we'll see you next week with Susie Barnes as our guest. We're going to do a little homemaking and talking about that. I'm Phil Parse. He said the blind man as he picked up his hammer and saw.
The Blind Handyman is produced by Out of Market Productions, 1604 Southwood Drive, Lufkin, Texas. Phone 936-634-9500.